Hey guys, and welcome back to the Talk with Chef Michael. You guys already know me, but just call me Mike. I am Chef Michael Silverstein here, passionate foodie and even more passionate keto head. That being said, I think it's really important that we have honest conversation around the keto diet, around food, nutrition, and generally the culture that surrounds the health community. Because look, it's not always rainbows and butterflies. So I want to be able to unpack some of those myths, some of those misconceptions, and really dive into what's really happening. That being said, if you want to find out more information about what's happening with this episode and any other episode, go to chefmichael.com/podcast, where you can get tons more information. And that's chef-michael.com/podcast. And if you want to help me keep the lights on with this podcast, a little bit of support goes a really long way. So go to patreon.com/chefmichael. You can join to be a member and you're going to get bonus episodes after each interview. I'm going to actually sit down and kind of reflect on what we just talked about. So get those bonus episodes at patreon.com/chefmichael. And finally, thank you to Redmond Real Salt for financially supporting this episode. Guys, if you watch my Instagram at all, you probably already know I have a little jar of Redmond salt sitting next to me on the stove at all times. It really is the best salt on the market. I mean, not only does it taste good, not only does it make my food yummy, but it's actually made here in the US in an ancient salt mine. That's a dried up seabed from the Jurassic era. It's packed with like 65 trace minerals. So we know the importance of getting those electrolytes and minerals on the keto diet, and just salting your food with Redmond salt is easily the way to do it. The cool thing about Redmond's is now you can find it at almost any supermarket in the country. But if you can't, go to redmond.life and you can put in an order for their salt using my checkout code ChefMichael for 15% off. And online, they even have some cool stuff like all natural toothpaste and face masks and all kinds of awesome stuff. So go check out redmond.life for more information. Now, we got a very special guest today, and before we dive into that, I want to give you a little word of warning. We are going to be covering some heavy topics today. And so if you are triggered by the discussion of eating disorders, specifically bulimia, or if you have children in the room who might be affected by this, this episode may not be for you. That being said, I think it's really important that we talk about all topics surrounding diet and weight loss. I think it's just a big discussion and I think it needs to be had. And I don't want there to be a taboo around disordered eating. So I've brought a special guest with me today. I'm going to introduce him right now. All right, guys, welcome to the stage, Jonathan Shane, just a amazing guy, but also a certified nutritional practitioner. And just somebody we've been connecting a lot with off of social media lately and has really inspired me, talks a lot about mindset and just really amazing stuff. So Jonathan Shane, welcome to the stage. And first of all, let me just say, it's not right that you're coming in here with a better beard than me. I'm not okay with this.
Whatever. I was literally looking at yours and I'm like, man, his beard's nice.
Not cool, man. Not cool. No, I love it, man. Welcome to the stage. You know what else occurred to me is that by the time this episode airs, if I'm not mistaken, you will be a father.
I will be a father. Yeah. We got like, right now it's, we're about 10 days out. Wow. So,
wow.
I know.
Amazing. How are you feeling about that? First time father. Talk to me through that. How are you feeling?
A lot of emotions. I don't know. Yeah. Wow. That, how are you feeling?
A lot of things.
Yeah. The closer it gets, the more confident I am. Cause I know who I am, you know, and I know what I bring to the table and I know what not to do. Most of the time, I'm sure I'll make my mistakes and I know that I'm imperfect. I know I'm going to make mistakes and I'm already trying to be graceful with myself proactively. But you know, I'm excited, but I'm also nervous. You know, there is a lot of, you know, the reason that I'm here and I am able to help people the way that I do is because I did go through the pain to be able to learn and know. Sure. And I don't, so it scares me. I like the idea of my daughter having to experience some of those pains at some point in life hurts me now just thinking about it. Because I was in some dark places at sometimes. And so that scares me. I think about that. But I also know that, like, she's going to be her own being, and she's going to make mistakes, and she's going to fall, and she's going to have to learn how to get back up. And that's okay. And that's just part of life. And so it's a lot of emotions. There's a lot of like daddy emotions, and then a lot of like, well, I want her to be her own person emotions. And so, it's a lot to sift through really when I actually sit down and think about it.
Yeah. And you know, you already got my brain spinning because you just said so much in such a little time. And I want to come back to that, but I got too excited by your beard. I didn't even give you a chance to say who you are, what you do, and maybe just a real kind of quick update as to how you got through that journey to where you are today.
Yeah, I'll do the elevator speech. So I'm a clinically certified nutritional therapist practitioner. I've been a keto coach for 3 years. I own my own keto coaching company. My health journey started when I was young. I was an emotional eater growing up. I was 260 pounds by the time I was 14 years old. Lost all the weight with a very bro science-y approach. Connected societal acceptance with me losing weight, which led to a very big fear of gaining weight, which led to a lot of body dysmorphic tendencies, which ended up becoming what I got was bulimia. Struggled with bulimia very severely for 8 years. It got really bad to, you know, 3-4 times a day. And then, you know, slowly I started working on it. My faith kind of helped me a lot when I was older teenager, and then getting into, you know, as an adult, started working on mindset and things like that. I got married when I was 20, yo-yo dieting, all that stuff, still struggling with the bulimia. And then in August of 2017, I fell upon the ketogenic diet, went my longest ever 9 months without purging. And then I actually made myself throw up after a bodybuilding show. I was having uncontrollable binges because the post show is just really rough mentally. And I realized that there was more than nutrition was great. Obviously the ketogenic diet had given me my longest break ever, but I needed more. And so that's when I really started being open with it, vulnerable with it, working on my mindset. And I started keto coaching. And then, you know, that was about 3 years ago, and now we're here.
Ooh, I find it fascinating because you kind of talk about going from 260 pounds as a tween to bodybuilding in a short amount of time. So that's quite a journey. So how long was it from 260 pound 14 year old, did you say, to bodybuilder? How many years do we have in that journey?
So, okay. So I would say, so my first show, I did my first show when I was 22. So okay. it was about 8 years that I actually did my first prep, but I it's actually very interesting. So I was 260 pounds and I lost all the weight in about a year and a half. I got down to 170. I was like a modeling for Academy, like well, guy's dream. I'm a model now. I'm like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And of course, none of that was what was going on internally. It was all really a facade. But anywho, I was really into like weights and stuff back then. And then it just kind of progressed. And then I always wanted to do like a bodybuilding prep. So I think being a bodybuilder, you don't have to get on stage to be a bodybuilder. So I would say probably by the time I was 16, 17, I was really into like, you know, forming my muscles and developing muscle in the gym and lifting weights and that kind of nature. And I think it just manifested itself fully when I was older because I got the chance to actually like try to prep for a show.
And your eating disorder was developed in your teens as well, I assume?
Yeah.
In between that process.
15.
Yeah, it almost seems, you know, for me who's quite not a bodybuilder, I'm not particularly athletic, I got to imagine that both ends of the spectrum are kind of a mind fuck, right? You know, one of them, you're on this weight loss mode. The other, it's like you are the ultimate sort of image. People are ultimately watching you and judging you in a competition, literally by your physique. Talk to me about the mental strain of all of that. And do you think that played into the bulimia?
So, okay. So I think, so actually there's really good questions. So I'll answer the first part. The mental strain from bodybuilding, I can say, came more from my own pressure. Okay. I didn't do it for other, like I didn't get on stage. Like, of course I'm competitive. I've always been competitive. I wanted to win, but I got on stage because I felt like if I could do it, then I was proving something to myself. And so really the pressure was on myself to prove that I could get to this level of leanness. I could be this quote unquote in shape or whatever. So that was that, like, that's where kind of that strain came from. And it was very heavy. I was very hard on myself, especially when like I prepped for 2 shows and the second one was last year. And that one went way better because I was in a much healthier mindset at that point in time in my life. But yeah, definitely the first one, like the mental strain was all me. It was very heavy. In terms of like if it manifested bulimia, no. So what really manifested the bulimia was when I was a kid, due to kind of like some family issues and stuff, I really dealt with acceptance in a very negative light. You know, back when I was obese, I was that kid that made fun of myself first and then laughed with everybody, because for me, being acknowledged, even if it was in a negative way, was better than alone. Like I actually have this song that I wrote one time, and one thing I say in it is like pain was better than alone, because being in
Wow.
pain due to being made fun of was better than it not being acknowledged at all. And so I struggled with that. And then when I lost all the weight, everybody was nice to me. And so I associated being thin with being accepted in a positive way. And I was so hell-bent. And because I didn't love myself and that external acceptance was what kept me sane, I was willing to hurt myself
Right.
to maintain it. And so like that's where like I come up with like the saying of like it's easy to hurt yourself when you hate yourself, because I really hated myself and I was dependent on these people's acceptance to feel like a normal person, a normal part of society. So I was willing to hurt myself to do that. And so the bulimia was just the way in which I hurt myself. And people do it in other ways. They do drugs or they starve themselves. There's so many ways in which people manifest from like
That's
societal acceptance like that.
exactly the way I was thinking. I mean, I feel like there are times when I use food as a reward system for myself, but I also feel like there are times when I almost punish myself when I binge, and I understand that. I understand the emotional tie behind food. So, you know, one of the things that I felt like even on my weight loss journey, I thought that, oh, if I just lose X pounds, I'll be happy, right? I think we all kind of think that. Like we look in the mirror, we don't like what we see. But it's really much more than that, because you can lose 100 pounds and still not love yourself, right? So how, you know, with your clients and even with yourself, how do we work on that? You know, how do we take what we see in the mirror and find love in it? Because it's like, I've lost weight, but before I didn't like how big I was. Now I don't like the loose skin or whatever it may be, right? Like there's always going to be something you can pick apart in the mirror. So how do we do that? You know, how in practice do we do that?
So I think first, like one of the big steps is acknowledging the truth. I think that oftentimes I think people have an idea that they don't like certain parts about themselves, but they're so hell-bent on trying to find an external way to fix something that's going on internal, you know?
Interesting.
And so we try to fix ourselves from the outside, hoping that it fixed the inside. And I'm a big believer that no, it needs to come from the inside out. The heart manifests the outward appearance. The outward appearance doesn't manifest the heart. And so I think it's really important that people take the time to sit down with themselves and go, okay, let's dig deep. Like that's why I have like that why exercise. Like, why are you doing this? Why do you do this? Why does it make you feel that way? Like, what's the lie that you're telling yourself? And because it's important to get to down to that truth or that lie that you the truth of the lie you
Yeah,
tell yourself of
100%.
like I don't like myself, I hate myself, right? Like so I think acknowledgement is one of the big ones, because for me, like you can't fix a problem that you don't want to admit exists, right? And so acknowledgement is probably the first step. And I think after that, it really comes down to practical things. I think one, you know, ripping that lie out, you have to replace it with the truth. I think it's good to acknowledge it, but you have to replace it, right? Because a lot of people, I look at like some of the mental struggles we have as humans, kind of like trees, right? Like we have this tree and then we have a branch and then like we grow this fruit, right? And like, for instance, for me personally, a personal example is like my fruit was bulimia. That was my fruit. And I would try to trim the branches back to keep the fruit from reducing. I would try to maintain my weight. I would go on a diet. I would do this. Like, but the thing is about trees, and as we know, if you trim the branches on the side, it'll grow branches at the top. It's going to find a way to grow. And the fruit's still
Interesting.
going to manifest regardless. And so the only way to really get rid of it is you have to uproot the tree. You have to pull the tree out of the ground. So like that tree of lies, you kind of have to rip it out of your mind and you have to replace it with the tree of truth. And so it's kind of like, okay, I acknowledge my lie. Now what's the truth? And so like for me, it was getting to the point of realizing that I hated myself, and then I had to replace it with truths, which means I had to start telling myself things that were true about me that were good. Like I'm energetic. I bring energy into rooms. I'm impactful. I'm motivating. I have, you know, I'm capable. I'm a bull in a china shop. I'm a go-getter. I'm goal-oriented. I'm a savage when I want to be. I'm mentally tough. I'm loving. I'm compassionate. Like, I know these things about me to be true, but I was so focused on the lie and letting that dictate my actions that that's what was happening. And so being able to rip that lie out and replace it with those truths and reinforce those truths daily made a huge difference, because now my heart was changing towards how it viewed itself and me, and that kind of showed outwardly.
Interesting. Interesting. And man, it's like I have so much I want to say because I've been there and I understand kind of having to unpack that. I'm just wondering, you know, somebody listening to this right now, how can we kind of start at square one, right? Like, how can we start at square one and say, man, I don't love the person that I am. How do you kind of unpack that first box? Because as you said, pulling the whole tree out of the ground is not an easy task. And it feels daunting, right? It feels daunting. Yeah, I could understand cutting off a limb, but it feels daunting. And I do agree with you. It's so, I don't know. I don't know if you have any insight on that.
So, okay. So here's a really, really one. Let me say this before I say anything else, because it's a good point. Be patient with yourself and be graceful. Right. You're not going to figure this out overnight. It took me 3 years to get where I'm at. And in fact, I've struggled with it for almost 10. So it's not going to happen overnight. And that's okay. We are imperfect beings. It's okay. That being said, one really simple exercise that I love is sit down with yourself. And I think that this kind of hits everything, but it's a very simple tool. And I get a red highlighter and a blue highlighter. And what I do is I highlight a red line, then a blue line, then I kind of do it like, you know, red line, blue line. And I do six. So I do three reds and three blues, one after the other. And then in the red lines, I write down a lie about myself. I write down a lie that I tell myself about something about me. Like with my bulimia, it was only one more time. Another lie was, this is going to make me feel better. Another lie was, no matter what, I'm fat, right? Like these lies I would tell myself. And then in the blue lines, I would write truths, the exact opposite of the lie I was telling myself. You know, it's always more than one more time. This doesn't make me feel better. It actually makes me feel 10 times worse. I'm not fat at all. I'm actually super healthy and awesome. And then you take those three truths that you come up with and you write them on a sticky note and you smack them on your bathroom mirror. And I find the bathroom mirror to be the most powerful place to put it. A lot of people say laptop or something. I love the bathroom mirror because it's not in your face. So you're not like assumed with like listening to it.
But that's where you kind of look at yourself.
But exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and not just that, but even if you're in a bad mood and you don't want to look at it, you have to go to the bathroom at some point. So at some point you're going to like go across it. And even if you try not to look at it, you're going to know it's there and it's going to remind you of what it says. And so at those good moments, it's on your mind. And so I find that to be a very simple, practical tool that people can use.
Yeah. I think that's really amazing. That's a great place to start. I'm going to put that into practice, to be honest with you. I don't know. I hear a lot of struggle and a lot of strength in your story, and it definitely inspires me. I think it's also really special that you share it and that you're comfortable being vulnerable, because disordered eating is not exactly a conversation that is publicly discussed all that much. You know, especially in our kind of diet weight loss culture, right? On social media and stuff, where everyone's kind of putting their best image first, you know, their best self is the easiest to portray on social media. I think it's really powerful that you do that. So I, first of all, just want to thank you for sharing it. And I think it's probably inspirational to a lot of people. I really do appreciate it. But I think it's got to be hard on you. Does that play a mental toll on your journey to be so open and to be talking about something that's potentially triggering, both for yourself or others?
Someone's ever asked me that question. It's a good question. I think it's never a bad thing. I'll preference that. It's never a bad thing. But it does. There are times that I post things that trigger me. Like I remember there was a post, that was a couple weeks ago. And I posted a photo of me at my leanest for my last bodybuilding show. I was like 180. I mean, abs are popped, all the cool stuff. And
yeah, I
took another photo of me that Yeah, I took that photo of me that morning, and I have like, you know, I weigh about 20 pounds more, but but in the post I put like, people don't know this, but that photo I took where I was really lean, I got in a fight with my wife that morning over something really stupid, because I'm just, when you're that lean and you're like starving yourself, you're like super irritable. You're not nice to be around. Like no one's nice being that lean. Like that's the ugly side of bodybuilding people don't talk about. And I'm a much nicer person at the weight I'm at now. I'm more active. I'm training for marathons. The person then, even though he was lean, could have not kept up with the guy that I am now at all. On a run, he would have died. And I know that, right? And so like, it was kind of the idea of like, visuals aren't always health, because people are constantly comparing aesthetics to being healthy. And that's just not the reality of it, right? Like health doesn't equal abs. Anyways, and I remember I posted it, and then literally like for the next hour and a half, I was literally having to like delete it. I had to delete Instagram off my phone because I got so triggered that people were seeing my stomach not lean, that like I had to like delete Instagram on my phone because I refused to take it down, because taking it down would go against exactly the point I was trying to make. So it was a growing moment for me, because it showed me that like, okay, I still struggle with the guys. So it's a good reminder sometimes for me that like, I still struggle with these things, and that those voices are just really quiet in my mind nowadays, but they're still there. And if I'm not careful, they can come back. And so there are things like that that do trigger me still, but for me, they're never bad. They're more of like self-awareness growing tools, if
It's
you will.
a
And
harsh
it's a good
reminder.
challenge for me. Exactly. But I also think about somebody else that is on in the same boat as me, that is seeing my post, and it's triggering them because it's bringing up stuff that they don't want to acknowledge. And I'm like, they need to read this. If it's making me feel this way, it's making somebody else feel this way. And they need to acknowledge it so they can deal with it. So it's staying up there.
Well, and you know, I think that I asked you the question because even for me, I think about this a lot. I have a strained relationship with the public-facing nature of my weight loss journey, right? It wasn't easy for me. When I started my Instagram, I didn't even show my face. It was never even about my own journey. It was just about the food because I love to cook. That's my like thing, right? And even to this day, I very rarely post before and afters because number one, I still don't even like seeing the before photos. Number two, to me, it's almost like embarrassing because it's me putting out there that I lost control, right? It's like, it's hard for me sometimes to be vulnerable about the lowest parts of my lows. I find that a struggle for me personally. In fact, I don't even have a real picture of my true highest weight. There was like some kind of candid stuff from before I started my weight loss journey and like, I don't think I took my first picture till probably 20 pounds in. I didn't even want to see what I looked like when I was in the 300s. Like, I didn't even want to see it. So I don't even have a true before and after photo. But even what I do have, I don't like seeing it. And I certainly don't love other people seeing it. But I've posted them, frankly, because I hope that it does inspire somebody, you know? And it does kind of inspire me too. Like, there is both sides of the coin, undeniably. But I think about that, and I think about the way you share your story, and I don't take it lightly because I understand that that could be hard for you to talk about you. We all, you know, at low points, I think that's really challenging, or at least it is for me.
Yeah, you know, and that resonates with me a lot, because I think about like, because my mind's twofold, you know, like I see pictures of me when I was 14, and I think at first I was really ashamed of those photos. Now I'm proud, because I know, every time I look at them now, I think about who I've become, not who I was. And I think that for me, that was a good mental shift. For me, it's the bulimic photos. Like I have a couple photos I've posted of me when I'm like really skinny, and those hurt for me to post.
Really?
Well, because I can't believe that I hated myself so much that I was willing to do that to myself. Like, I don't know. Like, I think about like when my bulimia was at its worst, and I was like super tiny. And I remember like I was throwing up like breakfast, lunch, dinner. I was throwing up blood. There was mornings I couldn't drink liquid because like my throat was so jacked up. Like I couldn't drink liquids. And so like when I see photos like that, it just it brings that back. And that hurts. Not because I'm not proud of overcoming it, but because the fact that I was willing to go there to appease what I thought people wanted to see from me. And yeah, it's just crazy. So But yeah, I agree with you. Like, but I post those anyways, and I remind myself of those things to be inspired, to know, because I remember, I remember there is a moment when my bulimia was at its worst. And so my parents had found out, and I was still doing it anyways. I used to throw up in the backyard, but my dogs found it. So my mom found it. She found out. It was like this whole thing. But I wasn't willing to give it up because I really liked it. So I started throwing up in the shower. And there was one night where I was eating and I couldn't, I was like, cause you get to like, you watch documentaries on bulimia to learn what they did. So you like study how to like make yourself throw up easier. It's crazy how into it you get.
Wow.
And I planned the binge. I planned the sodas. I had everything figured out and I'm in the shower and I'm trying to make myself throw up and nothing's coming up. And I remember it was such a dark moment. I remember I was on my knees in the shower, dry heaving. Cause I'm like, for like 30 minutes straight, I'm just trying to make myself throw up and nothing's coming up. So like my abs are just cramped and it hurts, but I'm like not willing to try and stop. And I'm crying like crazy because it hurts. It hurts. And I'm also so scared of gaining the weight because I can't get the food back out. And I just remember, yeah. Oh, hold on. I remember thinking in that moment, like, this is my life. How do you even get, where do you go for, like, this is what my life's like. Like, this is, and now I think about where I'm at now. And so I post those photos because I remember when I was in that place thinking there was no way out. And I want people to realize that me and others that are willing to be bold are proof that there is a way out. You know, there is a better version of you down there if you're just willing to start trying to confront it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think some of those rock bottoms in life, as painful as they are kind of required at times to like kick us in the ass. Obviously I don't share the story of bulimia, but I feel your pain. I know what a rock bottom feels like. And I almost feel like it's this, sometimes we need it. Sometimes we actually need the kick in the ass to ourself and just like that out of body experience where you're like seeing yourself and going, holy shit, this is my life. Like you just said. I get it in a certain way. I'll never truly understand, you know, your journey, but I do understand those moments to some extent. And it's, I guess looking back on it, it is like, well, at some point that rock bottom allowed you to start climbing up. Right?
That's true. It's very true. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's actually interesting. I was on a business call earlier and I was actually talking about something like that. I was like, cause you said you can resonate with me. And I totally feel that because I was like, it's crazy how our issues manifest in different ways. But if you really get down to the root of it, a lot of the people that we're in community with, we deal with the same kind of thoughts. We deal with the same kind of pressures. It's just the way that us as unique individuals. Yeah. It's just the way that it manifests in us as unique individuals is so vastly different.
Yeah. 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 And that kind of reminds me in a different way of how, again, a lot of times on social media, a lot of times in the health space, we see before and after pictures. It's used a lot in marketing. It's used a lot in social media. What we don't see is that journey to getting there. And sometimes I feel like I want to shake myself at the beginning because I remember so many times being frustrated on my weight loss journey or so many times throughout the past few years where I was like, oh, I haven't lost enough. There's more, right? Like I got to go further because this person lost 100 pounds and I'm at 70 at this point or whatever it is. And what we don't see are the struggles. We don't see those rock bottoms. We don't see the ups and downs looking like a roller coaster or a lightning bolt that just, it's not linear, you know, it's not this like magical thing where you're like one day, like I'm just going to not be that person. I'm going to be this other person. And you walk through that door and you're ready to go. And you come out the other side skinny and in love with your body, right? Like it's, I wish that was the journey, but it's not. It's just not. And so I think it's really important that, people understand who are starting a weight loss journey, that it's not going to be pretty. At least it wasn't for me and not for anybody else who's lost weight. Forget about just weight loss, just anybody who's had a health goal. It's not pretty. Like none of us are perfect in that path, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I think, no, I think you hit on something great. And I think that's, and I mean, that's why like, you know, and we've talked plenty on Clubhouse and other times. And, you know, something I'm really big on is like finding your why and knowing your purpose and knowing your identity and building it within the weight loss journey because of that, because it's not magical. Right. And it's like, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that they're 300 pounds, 400 pounds, they get down to 200 and then they look in the mirror and they're still like, I don't look any different. I don't feel any different. And like, and they literally feel so lost at that moment because they thought this external change was going to create this internal presence. And they're just like, it's just not there because that's not how it works. And it, yeah, it's why it's so important to embrace the fact that it's not going to be a pretty journey and that you're going to have to build identity and build love for yourself within the journey by, you know, taking time to, you know, embrace what your body's been through, what it's capable of and what it's going to do and just being consistent and like building your identity into who you're becoming, not just hoping that one day it just magically pops up, you know, like it's a magic show because weight loss is not a magic show.
Right. No. And, you know, so much of this conversation so far has been a lot of talking about emotion and kind of emotional baggage that comes behind a lot of this stuff, right? And the emotional piece. I think you said it earlier when we were talking, you said, you know, we got to get our mind right before we could do anything else in a certain extent. So the mental and emotional part of the journey is almost, or maybe it is more important than what food we put in our mouths, right? However, you're a nutritional practitioner. So how do you kind of cross those two together, because they're not independent, right? They connect. One doesn't work without the other. So how do you kind of work with clients specifically, or how have you found it within yourself where an emotional state of mind, right? Like if I'm having a bad day and I feel like shit, I'm obviously going to have a harder time making smart nutritional decisions as well. We get into emotional eating, we get into binging because of our training. You know, because of how we were raised or the environment we were in, you know, where food makes us happier. And when we are in those lows, we look to food, at least a lot of us do, to make us feel better. So, you know, how do you play with that and kind of turn up and down the dials, you know, with the people, with your patients and with the people you work with to kind of figure out, you know, how to create that balance? Because that's got to be challenging.
It can be, especially because when people come to me, they're usually hyper-focused on one or the other. Either they're like super mindset and the, you know, I just have to learn how to control if it fits your macros, who cares what the hell I'm eating. And then other people, like it's all about staying strict keto and who cares about my mind work. And so like, I find myself dealing with people that are generally hyper-focused on one or the other. And it's being able to build that bridge, as you said. And I think that it comes down to perspective, right? So I think that there's two big mental shifts that have to happen. And if they're willing to make these mental shifts, this is where my certification and my education can come in and really impact their life, because my education is nutrition. Right. My experience is nutrition and mindset, right? Like I wasn't educated on mental stuff, you know, so like, but for someone to receive education, they have to be willing to what? Invest in the institution. And so I need them to invest into the principles of the institution that I am to be able to receive the education that I want to give. And so I find that there's two really big things that they need to work on. One is seeing food as fuel that can be enjoyed. Food is not fun. Food is fuel that can be enjoyed. Not that food can't be fun, right? Obviously, you make delicious food that is fun, but you make food that fuels the body well, but it's still fun and enjoyable, right? You know how to do that. And you know, and so the trick is like when you go to, even you like even when most of the time when you go to make something for yourself, I'm pretty sure that even though on the conscious level of your mind, it's I'm gonna make something that's yummy, subconsciously, you're only gonna choose foods that know make you feel good, right? It's
Right.
already subconsciously there. You're already choosing foods that fuel you well.
Right.
So you kind of, and that's why you've been able to maintain the lifestyles because you already have, a lot of people don't have that. A lot of people don't look at food like that. They simply just go, okay, like either I need to eat the blandest food ever, or I need to just like, you know, look at food as like this fun thing that I can reward myself with later on. I got to stick with the nasty stuff now, right? There's really not that balance of like, okay, when I look at a food, I need to go, does it fuel me properly? And if it does, now how can I make it fun and enjoyable,
Right.
right? And so like being able to find, go through that process and have that perspective shift is super huge. Because with someone that has like it's all about mindset and it's not about macros, I can kind of shift that, tweak that, and now it's like, okay, when I look at something, is it fueling my body well? I know it's hitting my macros, but is it fueling my body well? Because oftentimes what we find is people that have eating disorders, even if they're mentally strong, if they're nutritionally deficient, they still struggle because their blood sugar's all over the place and all that. The other perspective switch that needs to happen is they need to learn how to be empowered in their choice making. And I think I've talked about this a couple times, again in Clubhouse. You know, we talk on that a lot. But
We are on Clubhouse a lot.
you know, yeah. But empowerment over restriction, this idea of being empowered. And I find that people that are on keto have a hard time with this. People that are nutritionally good have a hard time with this because they just want to eat the food. They don't want to work on themselves mentally. And having an empowered perspective is extremely daunting and scary to a lot of people because it makes you take responsibility for yourself. And now the food, now you're acknowledging the food's not in control. Now you're in control. And if you're not comfortable with being in control of yourself, it freaks you out. And but it's an essential part because being empowered leads to responsibility. And when you're responsible for something, you tend to care for it. Right,
Interesting.
respond because now it reflects you. Now you're acknowledging the
Right.
reflection of self on that thing. And so, like, I find when somebody's able to make those two mental shifts, that's when I'm really able to pour into them because now it's like, okay, you've got the mental game right and the nutritional game right. Because if they're able to see food as fuel, now I can pour into them nutritionally. If they're able to see that, you know, it's about empowerment, now we can work on the mental game and we can look at the food in a healthier way. Because even if they're looking at keto, even if they're doing keto, if their mental game's not right, they're still not seeing the food in a healthy light. They're just seeing it as this tool. And that's why you see people that go, how many people do you know have gone keto or gone paleo or whatever Whole Foods diet? They lose the weight and then they immediately revert back to their old
Course,
selves and just gain all the weight
of
back. And
course.
it's because they never made that shift. And so even though they're eating healthy, right? Even though I could give them the nutritional advice, they're not utilizing it right and they're not making it a part of their lifestyle properly because that perspective is off. And so I think making those two perspective changes is what allows me to kind of dive into people both mentally and nutritionally, if that made sense.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And yes, I've definitely known a lot of people in any diet that have yo-yoed, and I definitely see that as their why was non-existent or wrong. I think when you come into any diet with a why of I want to lose 20 pounds, it's not going to be a sustainable decision. When we have a why that goes much deeper, and maybe you can chime in on how you kind of talk about finding your why, because I think it really does come down to so much more. There's so much more value in finding your why than just deciding on like your macro breakdown. Of course, that stuff is critical, but if you have no why behind it, it's just numbers in an app or whatever, right? And I think that's what you're saying. Like they're connected. You can't do one without the other in both directions. And speaking of Clubhouse, one of the things that you actually taught me recently, very, very eloquently, I might add, was something really simple, and I can't get it out of my head, which is focus on the foods that you can eat and not the foods you can't. That was so simple. And yet, even for me, 2.5, 3 years into keto, still really kind of like gave me a little jolt of electricity because so much of diet culture, keto or not, centers around here are your restrictions. Here's what you need to cut out to lose weight, right? But the very simple thought of, wait, let's not talk about what I can't eat and just get excited about all the things I can eat. I can eat a juicy burger with bacon on top today. I can, you know what I mean? Like, I wish that that message was heard loud and clear, more and more and more and more, because you're right. And I think that's the empowerment that you can create around food as a in the nutritional camp that we're talking about, but that also connects to the emotional camp, right? Because it's so much more than just like, you're in food jail, you can't eat all this. In order to lose weight, in order to get healthy, you have to take away all these things that you like from your life and suffer through it. That's the way most people think of dieting. That's why I hate the word diet. I don't like calling it the keto diet. And in my cookbook, I never really use the word diet. You know, I don't want that to be a part of my messaging, because I think a diet is something you do for a few weeks. A lifestyle or a decision that you make to get better is a decision that lasts the rest of your life. It's not a diet. And I really appreciate you giving me the language that you gave me around that, because I always talk about on my account, man, just eat good food. The key to finding success on keto, in my opinion, is just find good recipes that you like. Because if you love the food you're eating the whole time, it's not a diet, right? And so that's all I try to do with my recipes, with my books, everything. All I want to do is just make food that anyone's going to like, keto or not. Because if you kind of eat food that you forget is keto, and sneaking in there a conscious and thoughtful approach to getting the nutrition out of it through those whole foods and getting the macros in my recipes to make sense, but then it's kind of like camouflaged as just delicious food. That to me is like, that's my ultimate goal, right? Like, that's everything. And I'm guessing it is for you too, right? Like, that's what it's all about. So I guess I started my question with like, how do you combine the mindset and the nutrition? And you've helped me realize we're both doing that in our own ways already, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, Michael, like, you know, I know I met you at KetoCon, and I think we talked a little bit back and forth, but I began to know you on Clubhouse recently. And like, dude, like it's interesting. Yeah. Like, you're right. Like, I talked to you and I'm like, man, like, you know, and obviously, like, you know, there have been things that you have obviously said you've learned and acknowledged and stuff, but like, you're really impacting people's lives, right? And you do it through such a unique way. Like, okay, so for instance, like, people don't know this about me, but I took like 5 culinary classes in school. I was almost a chef, low key.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty proud. I have a chili recipe that'll knock your socks off. Nice. Anywho, not about me. But like, you know, it's such a unique way where, like, you know, like me, like, it's very much more about like the mindset leading to the nutrition. And you're like, no, like, let me teach you how to make delicious foods that fuel you well, because I know that, you know, impacting you nutritionally is going to lead to you questioning and developing a healthy mindset and asking the whys. And, you know, so it's kind of like, exactly, we're really both doing the same thing, but in our unique ways, which is important, because there are going to be people that listen to this, they're going to come to me and go, wow, I really resonated with you. And there's going to be people that come to you and go, wow, I really resonate with you. And that's the beauty of it. Is that, you know, different tools for different fixins.
Yeah. And we've kind of found our own path, not even realized till we're literally recording this, as to a lot of our messaging overlaps, but coming from a different foundation of knowledge, right? Like, I don't write my recipes with a particular education of nutrition behind it, but I do know generally where I want it to rest in terms of macronutrients. But the only reason I started writing keto recipes was because I was writing them for myself. It was just something that I did for myself. Cause I'm like, look, if I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to have to enjoy it. And we talked about this in another context, where we talked about how, like, I don't particularly enjoy exercise. And so without going onto that tangent, the trick to getting through these things is to find enjoyment. So for me, if I'm enjoying what I'm eating, I'm fine. I'm not suffering. Like, if you're suffering on keto, that's the only indication that you're doing it wrong in my book. You know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, there's so much focus on like clean keto, dirty keto, all these labels and stuff. But I'm like, you keto however you want, as long as you're enjoying it. If you're not, it's not going to be sustainable. It's going to be what you mentioned, the person like a month later, 2 weeks later, has fallen off. And so, yeah, I think that's really interesting. I consciously decided that I was using nutrition first or f food first. I just wanted to write recipes as a chef, as someone that lives around food. Like my life is food. So I'm like, man, the only way I'm going to get through losing some weight is if I just love what I'm eating, and not realizing subconsciously that that was the mental work too. That was the emotional work. So I can still eat and be happy. I can still find the joy in that. That being said, I still have to be careful with my relationship with food. I still have to be careful with even keto treats because of the triggers that those create within me. I still have to find balance every day. I've had some ups and downs the last couple of years. After my first dramatic weight loss, I've had some ups and downs. I had to kind of like rethink it and take a little bit more of a directed approach starting January 1st this year, because I felt like through quarantine, emotional eating was probably a bigger part of my life than it was the year prior. And I know I am not alone in that, right? Like half the country probably gained the quarantine 15. So I'm not ashamed of it, but I had to readjust. I had to refind my like kind of center in keto and kind of re-remind myself, that's redundant, of why I love keto food and how good it makes me feel. In the last, you know, few weeks since the start of January 1st, it's the best I've felt in about 18 months. Because once you get off track, once you find those triggers, once you find that crappy food that gives you that drug-like high, you forget. But keto food really can be delicious. And I'm not here to preach it. I'm serious. Like, keto food can be really delicious.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I honestly, I'll be frank. I haven't used any of your recipes yet in that book, but I really want to. As a matter of fact, I'm looking for it right now. I can't find it. I think my wife's using it, and she's not telling me. No, I agree. You know, and I think also like something you talked about, like right, like is like reminding yourself of the truths of your diet, of your life, or of your lifestyle, of your nutrition, and the power of it, and the fact that you know it can satisfy you both from like mentally satiating and like nutritionally and all of that. I think it's important, right? Like something I talk about a lot is like people always ask me like, so are you recovered from your issues? And I'm like, no, I'm in active recovery. I'm always going to be in active
Sure.
recovery. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, because it takes us, I think people that have wrestled with food issues, regardless of what those are, it takes us constantly reminding ourselves of the truths, the beauties, and the empowering things of loving ourselves and doing the right thing and making the right choices for what's best for us, and reminding ourselves of that daily. Because what happens is if you know those voices just get really small, and we still struggle with them, right? Like we both talked about on this already about times that we've you know our tendencies have bit us in the butt. But at the end of the day, it's like no, the trick is just to keep those voices really small by reinforcing the truths that we know. Because I would be ignorant to say that if I got to a place of self-loathing, self-hate, and leaning on food for comfort again, that I wouldn't relapse on my bulimia. Hell yeah, I would. But I refuse to let myself get there. You know, so it's like I'm in active recovery. And so I think it's really cool that you recognize. See, you're still self-aware. I love it. But you actively are like, okay, like I know what I need to remind myself of and the truths that I know and that what I need to reinforce, and that sustains me. I love that.
Right. Well, and it doesn't always come easy, right? Sometimes it takes like stepping on the scale or, you know, re recognizing like a little bit of a low where you're like, oh, wait, whoa, 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 reset. Time to reboot this computer, right? Because, like we talked about a few minutes ago, it's not linear, it's not perfect. Like these journeys to health are not pretty. And I think it's okay, right? Like it's okay that it's not pretty. So, yeah.
Oh yeah, no, and I think, you know,
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say like something that I say often. In fact, it's on all over my merch, my shirts. It says, consistency is greater than perfection, because it is. Like, I don't need you to be, I don't need you to be perfect. I don't want you to be perfect, because you're not. You're never going to be. If your goal is perfection, you're going to live a sad life, because you're never going to be able to obtain the goal you have. I just want you to be consistent. I want you to realize that it's not about how hard you fall. It's about how you get back up, dust your knees off and keep going, and just be consistent, and I think what you said was right. I mean, it's not about being perfect. It's not about it. You're going to slip up. You're going to mess up. You're going to have bad days, and that's okay. It's okay for it to not be perfect. Weight loss isn't linear, right? Like, you're going to have ebbs and flows, and you know what that does? That makes you human. So congrats, you're human. So, like, own that and be a human, and just work on trying to be the best version of yourself every day. And over time, it's something I said, like, we have the ebbs and flows, and the idea is, like, the ebbs and flows, you want them on average to slowly go on an incline, so that the person you are 6 months from now is better. But if you look at it day to day, you just see ups and downs. But if you look at it from, like, 6 month span, you see a slow incline up. And that's kind of like, that's how weight loss is. That's how us as humans trying to become better versions of ourselves, are, is, I don't know the grammatic term there.
No, I love that, man. I love the messages you share, and I don't know. I just think it's really, really powerful stuff that you do, and I really appreciate your vulnerability today. It's not an easy topic to talk about. None of it. I don't find weight loss particularly easy to talk about. I don't do it that much on my account, and and this podcast for me, I think people know me on social media as Chef Michael, but I want people to know Michael too, I want people to understand that these beautiful recipes didn't come out of a magical place of thin air where, like, I was just all of a sudden this, like, keto master of food. It didn't work that way. It took a long time for me to work on this, and I do recipes every day that don't work, right? I do mindset work every day that doesn't work. It is not an automatic or easy process. So I really appreciate you coming on today and really sharing a lot of deep, dark stuff with us, because I really do feel it's important. And I think the work you do is amazing. I admire you a lot, Jonathan, and I really appreciate your time today. Before we go, I'd love to give you an opportunity to tell folks where to find more of you. And my last question for you, what do you got coming for us in 2021?
Oh, okay. So, first of all, I have to respond to you though. I appreciate you bringing me on. I was looking really forward to this, and it's cool to, like, actually have like a just a bro talk, just you and me. Like, this is fun. I really enjoyed this. So thank you. I enjoy these kind of talks. I like, because I'm big on men being vulnerable and emotional and being able to open up and just carry each other's burdens. No matter, your. It doesn't matter, like, anything, right? Like, where you come from, who you are, your skin color, your belief, I don't care, beliefs, whatever. We are called as humans to walk through life together. And so I love being able to talk with other men that I can resonate with, and we can share emotion and, like, just have an actual, genuine, open conversation. That means a lot to me. So thank you for having me on.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Okay. Yeah, where can you find me? So, theketoroad.com. My email is theketoroad@gmail.com, Instagram at theketoroad, TikTok at theketoroad. Yeah, those are probably the big ones. In terms of what's going on in 2021, oof. Oh yeah, when's this going live? Oh, it might already be live. I don't know when this goes. So, on the oh crap,
This
what is
should
today?
be
Today's the
out
8th,
maybe in
February
March.
8th.
We'll see how the production schedule goes, but not any time in the next few weeks. So,
Okay.
yeah.
So the 12th. So this Friday, we have our very first PDF program coming out. I've never built one. It's our first one, 6 chapters. It goes through macros, how to calculate your calories, meal planning, mindset work, finding your why, setting up goals, physical activity. It goes through all of it. It is very in depth. We just wanted to give a program that took all of our coaching and just packed it into 30 pages. So that's coming out. That should be out when this goes live. And then we also have a phone app. I don't know if that's going to be live when this phone app goes out, or when this goes out. I don't know if that's going to be live yet, but we're working on a phone app right now. I can't really give away
Cool.
too many details, but let's just say Imagine Facebook and my fitness pal had a baby.
Huh.
And there you have it.
Keto Rhodes got some big stuff coming. I love it. I love it. So a phone app. And then are you taking on private clients for coaching as well?
Oh yeah. Sorry. I'm really bad about plugging myself, you know, I don't know why. So if you want to get coached by me, go to my website. So I have two different programs. We have weight management and then we have holistic health. So the weight management, if you're just struggling with control of your food, or maybe you just want to lose weight, maybe you have the mental games on point, and you just want to lose weight. I love helping people just lose weight with a ketogenic diet. If you need help with controlling your food intake and you need accountability and you also are trying to lose weight, I got you. If you're trying to gain weight, I got you. In terms of the holistic health program, this is much more in depth. I use my clinical certification in this one. We look at nutritional deficiencies. We create a life action plan and stress life management plan to cater towards your nutritional needs, plus the weight management and the mindset work. So it's a more intense program. You can get the weight management program in 1 month or 3 months, and you can get the holistic health program in 1 month or 2 months. No contract, it's reoccurring. So we just go as long as you need to. And yeah.
I love it, man. Well, I can tell you just from getting to know you, you got so much to share, so much knowledge, so much experience. And, if anybody feels like they want to connect with Jonathan, please reach out on Instagram. You're always so accessible, and you're just such a great guy. So I really, really do appreciate you coming on here and sharing with us today. I really do love what you do. So thanks again for your time, and make sure to find Jonathan outside of this podcast. So thank you guys so much for joining me today. And thanks again to Redmond Salt for providing financial assistance to this episode. And if you haven't yet, get yourself a copy of my cookbook, New Keto Cooking. I really do make keto food easy, fun, and sexy. So give it a shot. It's anywhere books are sold. And find more on patreon.com/chefmichael, where I'll be doing kind of a little bonus episode and reflecting on the things that Jonathan and I talked about today. A little bit of support goes a long way. So find us on patreon.com/chefmichael or on my website at chefmichael.com/podcast. Thank you guys so much, and I'll see you on the next episode. Bye.